Chapter 19. The Wave Dancer. With the golden sun barely over the horizon, the shiny black lacquered carriage rocked to a halt at the foot of the wharf behind a team of four matched greys, and the lanky dark-haired driver in his black and gold striped coat leaped down to open the door. No sigil adorned the door panel, of course. Tyran nobles gave aid to Aes Sedai only under duress, no matter how effusive the smiles, and none wanted their names or houses linked to the tower. Elaine got down gratefully without waiting for Nynaeve, straightening her blue linen summer traveling cloak. The streets of the Mala were rutted by carts and wagons, and the carriage's leather springs had not been very good. A breeze slanting across the Erinin actually seemed cool after the heat of the stone. She had intended to show no effects of the rough ride, but once upright she could not help knuckling the small of her back. At least last night's rain still holds the dust down, she thought. She suspected that they had been given a carriage without curtains on purpose. North and south of her, more docks like wide stone fingers stretched into the river. The air smelled of tar and rope, fish and spices and olive oil, of nameless things rotting in the stagnant water between the piers, and peculiar long yellow-green fruits in huge bunches heaped in front of the stone warehouse behind her. Despite the early hour, men wearing leather vests on shirtless shoulders scurried about, toting large bundles on bent backs, or pushing handcarts piled with barrels or crates. None spared her more than a passing sullen glance, dark eyes falling quickly, forelock touched grudgingly. Most did not raise their heads at all. She was sad to see it. These Tyran nobles had handled their people badly. Mishandled them was more like it. In Andor, she could have expected cheerful smiles and a respectful word of greeting, freely given by straight-backed men who knew their worth as well as hers. It was almost enough to make her regret leaving. She had been raised to lead and one day govern a proud people, and she felt the urge to teach these folk dignity. But that was Rand's job, not hers. And if he doesn't do it properly, I will give him a piece of my mind. A bigger piece. At least he had begun by following her advice, and she had to admit he knew how to treat his people. It would be interesting to see what he had done by the time she returned, if there's a point to coming back. A dozen ships were clearly visible from where she stood, and more beyond, but one, moored across the end of the dock she faced, sharp bow upriver, filled her eyes. The Seafolk Raker was easily 100 paces long, half again as large as the next vessel in sight, with three great towering masts amidships, and one shorter on the raised deck at the stern. She had been on ships before, but never one so big, and never on one going to sea. Just the name of the ship's owners spoke of distant lands and strange ports. The Athan Mier, the Seafolk. Stories meant to be exotic always contained the Seafolk, unless they were about the Aiel. Nynaeve climbed out of the carriage behind her, tying a green traveling cloak at her neck, and grumbling to herself and to the driver. Tumbled about like a hen in a windstorm, thumped like a dusty rug. How did you manage to find every last rut and hole between here and the stone, Goodman? That took true skill. A pity none of it goes into handling horses. He tried to hand her down, his narrow face sullen, but she refused his aid. Sighing, Elaine doubled the number of silver pennies she was taking from her purse. Thank you for bringing us safely and swiftly. She smiled as she pressed the coins into his hand. We told you to go fast, and you did as we asked. The streets are not your fault, and you did an excellent job under poor conditions. Without looking at the coins, the fellow gave her a deep bow, a grateful look, and a murmured, Thank you, my lady, as much for the words as the money, she was sure. She had found that a kind word and a little praise were usually received as well as silver was, if not better. Though the silver itself was seldom unappreciated, to be sure. The lights send you a safe journey, my lady, he added. The merest flicker of his eyes toward Nynaeve said that wish was for Elaine alone. Nynaeve had to learn how to make allowances and give consideration. Truly she did. When the driver had handed their bundles and belongings out of the carriage, turned his team, and started away, Nynaeve said grudgingly, I shouldn't have snapped at the man, I suppose. A bird could not make an easy way over those streets, not in a carriage at any rate. But after bouncing about all the way here, I feel as if I'd been on horseback a week.
It isn't his fault you have a sore back, Elaine said, with a smile to take away any sting as she took up her things.
Nynaeve barked a wry laugh. I said that, didn't I? You will not expect me to go running after him to apologize, I hope. That handful of silver you gave him should soothe any wounds short of mortal. You really must learn to be more careful with money, Elaine. We do not have the realm of Andor's resources for our own use. A family could live comfortably for a month on what you hand out to everyone who does the work they've been paid to do for you.
Elaine gave her a quietly indignant look. Nynaeve always seemed to think they should live worse than servants, unless there was reason not to, instead of the other way around, as made sense. But the older woman did not appear to notice the expression that always put royal guardsmen on their toes. Instead, Nynaeve hoisted her bundles and sturdy cloth bags and turned down the dock.
At least this ship will be a smoother ride than that. I do hope smooth. Shall we go aboard?
As they picked their way down the pier between working men and stacked barrels and carts full of goods, Elaine said, Nynaeve, the sea folk can be touchy until they know you, or so I was taught. Do you think you might try to be a little...
A little what?
Tactful, Nynaeve.
Elaine skipped a step as someone spat on the dock in front of her. There was no telling which fellow had done it. When she looked around, they all had their heads down and were hard at work. Mishandling by the High Lords or no, she would have said a few quietly sharp words that the culprit would not have soon forgotten if she could have found him.
You might try to be a little tactful for once.
Of course. Nynaeve started up the Raker's rope-railed gangway. As long as they do not bounce me about.
Elaine's first thought on reaching the deck was that the Raker appeared very narrow for its length. She did not know a great deal about ships, in truth, but to her it seemed a huge splinter.
Oh, light, this thing will toss worse than the carriage, however big it is.
Her second was for the crew. She had heard stories about the Atha'an Mi'er, but had never seen one before. Even the stories told little, really. A secretive people who kept to themselves, almost as mysterious as the Aiel. Only the lands beyond the waste could possibly be more strange, and all anyone knew of them was that the sea folk brought ivory and silk from there. These Atha'an Mi'er were dark, barefoot and bare-chested men, all cleanly shaven, with straight black hair and tattooed hands, moving with the sureness of those who knew their tasks well enough to do them with half a mind, but were putting their whole minds to it. There was a rolling grace to their movements, as though, with the ship still, they yet felt the motions of the sea. Most wore gold or silver chains about their necks, and rings in their ears, sometimes two or three in each, and some with polished stones. There were women among the crew, too, as many as the men, hauling ropes and coiling lines right with the men, with the same tattooed hands, in the same baggy breeches of some dark oiled cloth, held by colorful narrow sashes and hanging open at the ankle. But the women wore loose, colorful blouses, too, all brilliant reds and blues and greens, and they had at least as many chains and earrings as the men, including, Elaine noticed with a small shock, two or three women with rings in one side of their noses. The grace of the women outshone even that of the men, and put Elaine in mind of some stories she had heard as a child by listening where she was not supposed to. Women of the Atha'an Mi'er were in those tales the epitome of alluring beauty and temptation pursued by all men. The women on this ship were no more beautiful than any others, really, but watching them move, she could believe those tales. Two of the women on the raised deck at the stern were obviously not ordinary crew. They were barefoot, too, and their garb was of the same cut, but one was clothed entirely in brocaded blue silks, the other in green. The older of the pair, the one in green, wore four small gold rings in each ear and one in the left side of her nose, all worked so they sparkled in the morning sunlight. A fine chain ran from her tiny nose ring to one earring, supporting a row of tiny dangling gold medallions, and one of the chains around her neck held a pierced golden box, like ornate gold lace, that she lifted to sniff from time to time. The other woman, the taller, had only 6 earrings in total and fewer medallions. The pierced box she sniffed at was just as finely wrought gold, though. Exotic indeed. Elaine winced just thinking about the nose rings and that chain. Something odd about the stern deck itself caught her eye, but at first she could not tell what. Then she saw. There was no tiller for the rudder. Some sort of spoked wheel stood behind the women, lashed down so it could not turn, but no tiller. How do they steer? The smallest riverboat she had seen had had a tiller. There had been tillers on all the other ships lining the nearby docks. More and more mysterious, these sea folk. Remember what Moiraine told you, she cautioned as they approached the stern deck. That had not been much. Even Aes Sedai knew little about the Atha'an Mier. Moiraine had imparted the proper phrasings, though, the things that had to be said for good manners. And remember tact, she added in a firm whisper. I will remember, Nynaeve replied sharply. I can be tactful. Elaine truly hoped she would. The 2 sea folk women waited for them at the top of the stairs. Ladder, Elaine remembered, even when they were stairs. She did not understand why ships had to have different names for common things. A floor was a floor in a barn or an inn or a palace. Why not on a ship? A cloud of perfume surrounded the 2, a slightly musky scent, wafting from the lacy gold boxes. The tattoos on their hands were stars and seabirds surrounded by the curls and whirls of stylized waves. Nynaeve inclined her head. I am Nynaeve Almira, Aes Sedai of the Green Adja. I seek the sailmistress of this vessel and passage, if it pleases the light. This is my companion and friend, Elaine Trakand, also Aes Sedai of the Green Adja. The light illumine you and your vessel and send the winds to speed you. That was almost exactly the way Moiraine had instructed them to speak. Not about Aes Sedai of the Green Adja. Moiraine had seemed resigned to that more than anything else, and amused at their choice of Adja, but the rest. The older woman, with gray touches in her black hair and fine wrinkles at the corners of her large brown eyes, inclined her head just as formally. Nevertheless, she seemed to be taking them in from head to foot, especially the great serpent ring each wore on her right hand. I am Coeen Din Jubai Wildwinds, sailmistress of Wave Dancer. This is Jorin Din Jubai Whitewing, my sister of the blood and windfinder of Wave Dancer. There may be passage available, if it pleases the light. The light illumine you and see you safe to your journey's end. It was a surprise that the 2 were sisters. Elaine could see the resemblance, but Jorin looked much younger. She wished the Windfinder were the one they had to deal with. Both women had the same reserve, but something about the Windfinder reminded her of Avienda. It was absurd, of course. These women were no taller than she herself. Their coloring could not have been more different from the Aiel woman's, and the only weapon either had in sight was the stout knife tucked in her sash, looking very workmanlike, despite carvings and gold wire inlays on the handle. But Elaine could not help feeling some similarity between Jorin and Avienda, anyway. Let us talk then, sailmistress, if it pleases you, Nynaeve said, following Moiraine's formula, of sailings and ports and the gift of passage. The sea folk did not charge for passage, according to Moiraine. It was a gift, which just coincidentally would be exchanged for a gift of equal value. Coeen glanced away, then astern toward the stone and the white banner rippling over it. We will talk in my cabin, Aes Sedai, if it pleases you. She motioned toward an open hatch behind that strange wheel. The welcome of my ship to you and the grace of the light be upon you until you leave his decks. Another narrow ladder, staircase, led down into a neat room, larger and taller than Elaine had expected from her experiences on smaller vessels, with windows across the stern and gimbaled lamps on the walls. Almost everything seemed to have been built into the room except for a few lacquered chests of various sizes. The bed was large and low, right under the stern windows, and a narrow table surrounded by armchairs stood across the middle of the room. There was very little clutter. Rolled charts lay on the table, a few ivory carvings of strange animals stood on railed shelves, and half a dozen bare-bladed swords of different shapes, some that Elaine had never seen before, rested on hooks on the walls. An oddly worked square brass gong hung from a beam over the bed, while right before the stern windows, as if in a place of honor, a helmet sat on a featureless wooden head carved for the purpose, a helmet like the head of some monstrous insect, lacquered in red and green, with a narrow white plume to either side, one broken. The helmet Elaine recognized. "Shan-chan," she gasped before thinking. Nynaeve gave her a vexed look, and deservedly. They had agreed it would make more sense and ring more true if Nynaeve, as the older, took the lead and did most of the talking. Coeen and Jorin exchanged unreadable glances. "You know of them?" the sailmistress said. "Of course, one must expect Aes Sedai to know these things. This far east we hear a score of stories, the truest less than half true." Elaine knew she should leave it at that, but curiosity tickled her tongue. "How did you come by the helmet, if I may ask?"
"Wave Dancer encountered a Shan-chan ship last year," Coeen replied. "They wished to take him, but I did not wish to give him up." She shrugged slightly. "I have the helmet to remind me, and the sea took the Shan-chan, the light be merciful to all who sail. I will not go close to a vessel with ribbed sails again." "You were lucky," Nynaeve said curtly. "The Shan-chan hold captive women who can channel, and make them channel as a weapon. If they had had one on that ship, you would be regretting ever having seen it." Elaine grimaced at her, though it was too late. She could not tell whether the sea folk women were offended by Nynaeve's tone. The pair kept the same neutral expressions, but Elaine was beginning to realize they did not show very much on their faces, not to strangers anyway.
"Let us speak of passage," Coeen said.
"If it pleases the light, we may call where you wish to go. All things are possible in the light. Let us sit."
The chairs around the table did not slide back. They and the table were fastened to the floor, deck. Instead, the arms swung out like gates and latched in place once you had sat. The arrangement seemed to bear out Elaine's dire predictions of heaving and pitching. She did very well with it herself, of course, but too much rolling on a riverboat set Nynaeve's stomach jumping. It must be worse on the ocean than on a river, however fierce the wind, and the worse Nynaeve's stomach, the worse her temper. Nynaeve sicking up and in a bad collar at the same time, there were few things more dreadful in Elaine's experience. She and Nynaeve were placed together on one side of the table with the sailmistress and the windfinder at the ends. At first it seemed strange, until she realized they would both look at whichever of the two was talking, allowing the other to watch them unobserved. "Do they always deal with passengers this way, or is it because we're Aes Sedai?"
"Well, because they think we are."
It was a caution that everything might not be as simple as they hoped with these people. She hoped Nynaeve was taking notice. Elaine had not seen any order passed, but a slender young woman with only one ring in each ear appeared, bearing a tray with a square white brass-handled teapot and large handleless cups, not of sea folk porcelain as might have been expected, but thick pottery. Less likely to be broken in heavy weather, she decided bleakly. It was the young woman who took her attention, though, and nearly brought a gasp. She was bare to the waist, just like the men above. Elaine hid her shock very well, she thought, but Nynaeve sniffed loudly. The sailmistress waited until the girl had poured tea brewed to blackness, then said, "Have we sailed, Dorel, when I did not see? Is there no land in sight?" The slender woman blushed furiously.
"There is land, sailmistress."
It was a miserable whisper.
Coeen nodded.
"Until there is no land in sight, and has been none for one full day, you will work at cleaning the bilges where garments are a hindrance. You may leave."
"Yes, sailmistress,"
the girl said, even more woefully. She turned away, undoing her red sash dejectedly as she went through the door at the far end of the room.
"Share this tea, if it please you," the sailmistress said.
that we may talk in peace. She sipped at her own and continued while Elaine and Nynaeve were tasting theirs. I ask that you forgive any offense, Aes Sedai. This is Dor-El's first voyage, except between the islands. The young often forget the ways of the shorebound. I will punish her further if you are affronted.
There is no need,
Elaine said hastily, taking the excuse to set her cup down. The tea was even stronger than it looked, very hot, unsweetened, and quite bitter. Truly, we were not offended. There are different ways among different peoples. The light scent, not too many more as different as that. Light! What if they don't wear any clothes at all once they get out to sea? Light! Only a fool takes offense at customs different from her own. Nynaeve gave her a level look, bland enough for the Aes Sedai they were pretending to be, and took a deep swallow from her cup. All she said was, please think no more of it. It was not possible to tell if she meant it for Elaine or the sea folk women. Then we will speak of passage, if it pleases you, Coeen said. To what port do you wish to sail? Tanchico, Nynaeve said, a bit more briskly than she should have. I know you may not mean to sail there, but we need to go quickly as only a raker can and without stopping if that is possible. I offer this small gift for the inconvenience. She took a paper from her belt pouch and unfolded it, pushing it down the table to the sailmistress. Moiraine had given that to them, and another like it, letters of rights. Each allowed the bearer to draw up to 3,000 gold crowns from bankers and moneylenders in various cities, though it was not likely any of those men and women knew it was White Tower money they held. Elaine had goggled at the amount, Nynaeve had gaped openly. But Moiraine said it might be needed to make the sailmistress forsake her intended ports of call. Coeen touched the letter of rights with one finger, read. A vast sum for the gift of passage, she murmured, even counting that you ask me to alter my sailing plans. I am more surprised now than before. You know that we very seldom carry Aes Sedai on our ships. Very seldom. Of all who ask passage, only Aes Sedai may be refused, and almost always are, as from the first day of the first sailing. Aes Sedai know this, and so almost never ask. She was looking into her teacup, not at them, but Elaine glanced the other way and caught the windfinder studying their hands lying on the table. No, their rings. Moiraine had not said anything about this. She had pointed out the Raker as the swiftest ship available and encouraged them to make use of it. Then again she had given them these letters of rights, very likely sufficient to buy a fleet of ships like this one. Well, several ships at the least. Because she knew it would take that much to bribe them to carry us? But why had she kept secrets? A foolish question. Moiraine always kept secrets. But why waste their time? Do you mean to refuse us passage? Nynaeve had abandoned tact for bluntness. If you do not carry Aes Sedai, why did you bring us down here? Why not tell us up above and be done with it? The sailmistress unlatched one arm of her chair, rose, and went to peer out of the stern windows at the stone. Her earrings and the medallions across her left cheek glittered in the light of the rising sun. He can wield the one power, so I have heard, and he holds the sword that cannot be touched. The Aiel have come over the dragon wall to his call. I have seen several in the streets, and it is said they fill the stone. The stone of Tyr has fallen, and war breaks over the nations of the land. Those who once ruled have returned and been driven back for the first time. Prophecy is being fulfilled. Nynaeve looked as confounded as Elaine felt at this change of subject.
The prophecies of the dragon? Elaine said after a moment. Yes, they are being fulfilled. He is the dragon reborn, sailmistress.
He's a stubborn man who hides his feelings so deeply I cannot find them. That is what he is. Coeen turned. Not the prophecies of the dragon, Aes Sedai. The Jendai prophecy. The prophecy of the Koromor. Not the one you wait for and dread. The one we seek, herald of a new age. At the breaking of the world, our ancestors fled to the safety of the sea while the land heaved and broke as storm waves do. It is said they knew nothing of the ships they took to flee, but the light was with them, and they survived. They did not see the land again until it was still once more, and by then much had changed. All, everything, the world, drifted on the water and the wind. It was in the years after that the Gendai prophecy was first spoken. We must wander the waters until the Koromor returns and serve him at his coming. We are bound to the sea. The salt water courses in our veins. Most of us set no foot on the land except to await another ship, another sailing. Strong men weep when they must serve ashore. Women ashore go onto a ship to bear their children, into a rowboat if no more is at hand, for we must be born on the water, as we must die on it, and be given to it in death. The prophecy is being fulfilled. He is the Koromor. Aes Sedai serve him. You are proof of that, that you are here in this city. That is in the prophecy as well. The White Tower shall be broken by his name, and Aes Sedai shall kneel to wash his feet and dry them with their hair. You will have a long wait if you expect to see me wash any man's feet, Nynaeve said wryly. What does this have to do with our passage? Will you take us or not? Elaine cringed, but the sailmistress came back just as directly. Why do you wish to journey to Tanchico? It is an unpleasant port of call now. I docked there last winter. Shore folk nearly swarmed my vessel seeking passage out to anywhere. They did not care, so long as it was away from Tanchico. I cannot believe conditions are any better now. Do you always question your passengers so? Nynaeve said. I've offered you enough to buy a village. Two villages. If you want more, name your price. Not a price, Elaine hissed in her ear. A gift! If Coen was offended, or even had heard, she gave no sign. Why? Nynaeve took a tight grip on her braid, but Elaine laid a hand on her arm. They had planned to keep a few secrets themselves, but surely they had learned enough since sitting down to alter any plan. There was a time for secrecy and a time for truth.
We hunt the Black Aja, sailmistress. We believe some of them are in Tanchico.
She met Nynaeve's angry stare calmly.
We must find them, else they may harm the Dragon Reborn, the Koromor.
The light see us safe to docking,
the Windfinder breathed. It was the first time she had spoken, and Elaine stared at her in surprise. Jorin was frowning and not looking at anyone, but she spoke to the sailmistress.
We can take them, my sister. We must.
Coen nodded. Elaine exchanged looks with Nynaeve and saw her own questions mirrored in the other woman's eyes. Why was it the Windfinder who decided? Why not the sailmistress? She was the captain, whatever her title. At least they were going to get passage after all. For how much? Elaine wondered. How large a gift? She wished Nynaeve had not revealed that they had more than was in that one letter of rights.
And she accuses me of tossing gold about.
The door opened and a heavy-shouldered, gray-haired man in loose green silk breeches and sash came in, ruffling through a sheaf of papers. Four gold rings decorated each ear, and three heavy gold chains hung at his neck, including one with a perfume box. A long, puckered scar down his cheek and two curved knives tucked in his sash gave him something of a dangerous air. He was fastening a peculiar wire framework over his ears to hold clear lenses in front of his eyes. The sea folk made the best-looking glasses and burning lenses and the like, of course, somewhere on their islands, but Elaine had never seen anything like this device. He peered through the lenses at the papers and began talking without looking up.
Coen, this fool is willing to trade me 500 snow fox pelts from Kandor for those three small barrels of Two Rivers tabak I got in Ebu Dar. 500? He can have them here by midday.
His eyes rose and he gave a start. Forgive me, my wife. I did not know you had guests. The light be with you all.
By midday, my husband, Coen said, I will be falling downriver. By nightfall, I will be at sea.
He stiffened.
Am I still cargo master, wife? Or has my place been taken while I did not see?
You are cargo master, husband, but the trading must stop now and preparations begin for getting underway. We sail for Tanchico.
Tanchico?
The papers crumpled in his fist, and he brought himself under control with an effort.
Wife? No, sail mistress. You told me our next port was Mayenne, and then eastward to Shara. I have traded with that in mind. Shara, sail mistress, not Tarabon. What I have in my holds will bring little in Tanchico, perhaps nothing. May I ask why my trade is to be ruined and Wave Dancer impoverished?
Coeen hesitated, but when she spoke, her voice was still formal.
I am sail mistress, my husband. Wave Dancer sails when and where I say. It must be enough for now.
As you say, sail mistress, he rasped. So it is.
He touched his heart. Elaine thought Coeen flinched, and padded out with his back stiff as one of the ship's masts.
I must make this up to him, Coeen murmured softly, staring at the door. Of course it is pleasant making up with him, usually.
He saluted me like a deck boy, sister.
We regret being a cause of trouble, sail mistress, Elaine said carefully. And we regret having witnessed this. If we have caused any embarrassment to anyone, please accept our apologies.
Embarrassment?
Coeen sounded startled.
Aes Sedai, I am sail mistress. I doubt your presence embarrassed Toram, and I would not apologize to him for that if it did. Trade is his, but I am sail mistress. I must make up to him, and it will not be easy, since I must keep the reason secret still, because he is right, and I could not think quickly enough to give him a reason beyond what I would give a raw hand. That scar on his face he earned clearing the Shanchan from Wave Dancer's decks. He has older scars earned defending my ship, and I have only to put out my hand to have gold placed in it because of his trading. It is the things I cannot tell him I must make up to him because he deserves to know.
I do not understand, Nynaeve said. We would ask you to keep the Black Aja secret. She shot a hard look at Elaine, one that promised hard words once they were alone. Elaine intended a few words of her own about the meaning of tact. But surely 3,000 crowns is reason enough to take us to Tanchico.
I must keep you secret, Aes Sedai. What you are and why you travel. Many among my crew consider Aes Sedai bad luck. If they knew they not only carried Aes Sedai, but toward a port where other Aes Sedai may serve the Father of Storms. The grace of the light shone on us that none was close enough to hear me call you so above. Will it offend if I ask you to keep below as much as possible, and not to wear your rings when on deck? For answer, Nynaeve plucked her great serpent ring off and dropped it into her pouch. Elaine did the same, a bit more reluctantly. She rather enjoyed having people see her ring. Not quite trusting Nynaeve's remaining store of diplomacy at this point, she spoke up before the other woman could.
Sail, mistress, we have offered you a gift of passage if it pleases you. If it does not, may I ask what would?
Coeen came back to the table to look at the letter of rights again, then pushed it back to Nynaeve.
I do this for the Coromor. I will see you safe ashore where you wish, if it pleases the light. It shall be done.
She touched the fingers of her right hand to her lips.
It is agreed, under the light.
Jorin made a strangled sound.
My sister, has a cargo master ever mutinied against his sail mistress?
Coeen gave her a flat-eyed stare.
I will put in the gift of passage from my own chest. And if Toram ever hears of it, my sister, I will put you in the bilges with Dorel. For ballast, perhaps.
That the two seafolk women had dropped formality was confirmed when the Windfinder laughed aloud.
And then your next port would be in Chachin, my sister, or Camelin, for you could not find the water without me.
The sail mistress addressed Elaine and Nynaeve regretfully.
Properly, Aes Sedai, since you served the Coromor, I should honor you as I would sail mistress and windfinder of another ship. We should bathe together and drink honeyed wine and tell each other stories to make ourselves laugh and weep. But I must make ready to sail, and—
Wave Dancer rose like his name, leaping, pounding against the dock.
Elaine whipped back and forth in her chair, wondering as it continued whether this was really better than being thrown to the deck. Then, finally, it was over, the leaps slowing, growing smaller. Coeen scrambled to her feet and raced for the ladder, Jorin at her heels, already shouting orders to look for damage to the hull.